Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I'm a professor of law at W.M. Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus, here with my compatriot, Brendan Berry, who is also, just by sheer happenstance, a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School, and it really is just happenstance that he's there. Brendan couldn't resist that. And this is the Constitution and whatever else we want to talk about today. And I have to do the disclaimer. That is that everything that Brendan and I say and the opinions that we render are our opinions alone, except for the ones that we agree upon, which is almost everything. But it's not necessarily the opinion of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School or its faculty, either individually or at large. And good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. We're just kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm not gaining any moss, so I must be a rolling stone. I'm not gaining any moss. I'm not gaining a lot of ground, but I'm not gaining any moss. Okay, so I'm doing okay. We are here with our patron, friend, all-around good guy, Hezzy Aris. Good morning, Hezzy.
Good morning, both of you. A pleasure.
Okay, well, it's always our pleasure.
Yeah.
You look forward to Tuesdays? I look forward
absolutely
to any day. Okay, I mean, you know.
Well, you're just more honest than I am, but, you know, at the top of my list, Tuesday just hits the bar. You know, not the other days are not all that great.
I'm sorry to hear that. I really am. Either that's a real compliment to us or it's a real downer as to the rest of the world. I haven't figured it out yet, okay? But I'm sorry. In one sense, I'm glad that you love us so much. You love us so much. But I really am kind of, you know, disappointed that, you know, the rest of your life seems to be at such a low ebb that we're, you know, the highlight of your life. Okay, so I'm sorry about that.
Well,
but we'll do the best we can.
I'm a simple guy. I don't know what you expected.
Okay. Well, good morning to you anyway.
Good morning.
It's like I look forward, you know, good morning, Marilyn. Marilyn and I have a difference of opinion. I happen to love sunrises. Mm. She likes sunsets. I like sunrises because, to me, I'm enjoying the start of a new day. There's actually a new day in my life, okay? Always looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Marilyn likes sunsets. To me, that's like saying goodbye to this day. I hope you get another one. That's kind of the way that I look at sunsets. Okay.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. Okay.
Yeah.
Sunset, you can have a glass of wine with sunset. You should not be doing that
good
at sunrise.
Point.
That's great. Maybe that's,
well,
maybe that's fine.
There you go.
Yeah.
Alcoholics Anonymous would just love for you to tell people that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got to say, sunset is better. It is better with a glass of wine. I have to cop to that. Yep.
We have a guest speaker. We have a guest speaker from WMU Cooley Law School.
Yeah.
Okay, Brendan Berry.
Yeah, right.
He likes sunsets like the rest of you because that's like your license to now enjoy a glass of wine.
That's right.
Okay,
I was lecturing AA, I'd be saying you should have a glass of wine with the sunrise. Okay, that's when you got a problem.
Yeah, start your day out right and keep it rolling.
Right. God.
Okay. All right.
Boy, we got on track there pretty fast. All right, let's go.
We really did. We got it going.
Yeah.
We start each of these little episodes of ours talking about what do we really think. And there is so much out here, and we're going to try to move as fast as we can through a lot of stuff that's going on. And I'm going to start out this morning talking about a Florida sheriff. And you would assume, based upon if you've listened to me before, that I have something to absolutely indict a Florida sheriff for. I don't. Not in this case. I got a lot of things I can say about a lot of sheriffs. this is something unique. There is a sheriff by the name of Mike Chitwood. He is the sheriff of Volusia County. And for those of you who don't know where Volusia County is, and in fact, the Senator Scott from Florida didn't know where Volusia County was, even though he had a hospital he owned there. Volusia County is where Daytona Beach is. They got it now? The Daytona 500 and all that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It's on the coast. And he has decided that he is going to war against the group, the people in his county, and in particular a group of people in his county that are neo-Nazis. And he announced this, that he considered all of them, the people who were putting down anti-Semitic flyers and messages on literature and banners, that they were nothing by, and I'm quoting him, they were nothing but a radical group of cowardly scumbags.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they have come to the wrong county, that they had unity there, and they were beside one another, and they supported their Jewish neighbors, and he wasn't going to tolerate it. He says, this is not free speech. This is about violence. A rather enlightened thought process for the sheriff of Volusia County. So he apparently started getting some threats from around the country. We're not talking about people in Volusia County. One of them was a guy named Christian, with a T-H, Christian Zapata. He lived in Connecticut. He made his threats on a platform called 4chan, said, I will kill Chitwood. Mark my words. He then told police he made the post after hearing about the events in Florida. Zapata is in custody in Connecticut fighting extradition to Volusia County, Florida.
Mm.
In March, a guy named Richard Golden of New Jersey and another guy by the name of Tyler Meyer of San Diego were charged with making the written threats to kill or injure the sheriff of Volusia County on 4chan. And they were arrested in California and New Jersey, in which in their homes, they found guns and ammunition and electronics. And Meyer was taken into custody in San Diego. He was extradited to Volusia County and apparently is still in custody. Golden was able to make bond. He's back in New Jersey. But his attorney, by the way, doesn't comment on him. I wouldn't either. I wouldn't represent him, first of all, but if I did, I certainly wouldn't comment on him. This is something new and different in the state of Florida. A sheriff who lives in a county where the Daytona 500 and NASCAR racing, and you can just figure NASCAR racing fans, NASCAR racing is the big thing. The place where there are twice a year biker fests. Biketoberfest is the big one in October. Bikers coming in there. Thousands and thousands of people riding their Harley Davidsons all over Daytona. And he's standing up for the Jewish community in Volusia County. I'd like to see the sheriff in a number of other counties around here, like Pasco County and others, stand up for their Jewish communities. But they won't. They won't. Because they know who their electorate is. And besides, they're one of their electorates. So I congratulate Sheriff Chitwood. I'm sure he's not popular in the Sheriff's Association right now. And if I were him, I could care less.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the right thing. You don't want to do the right thing? That's fine. And remember, in Florida, the most powerful politicians in any county are the sheriffs. because other than some judges, they're the only ones who are elected countywide. They carry an extreme amount of power. Same thing's happening in Michigan, by the way, with their sheriffs. Sheriffs are just, you know, what you see in the movies. That's who they are. So I have something good to say, and that is that I congratulate Sheriff Chitwood. You have a fan. Not that you care that I'm your fan, but you have a fan. And that's what I think today.
Nice. That is a nice positive note to start on. Just to dovetail off of that a little bit, you know, these people, these right-wing extremists need to understand that not all speech is protected speech. That seems to be kind of widely misunderstood on the far right, political right. There are things, and courts have said this since the beginning of the Republic, you know, that our constitutional rights, and obviously free speech is one. First of all, as we've talked about many times on this program, the First Amendment only is a restraint on governmental action, not on private. So you and I don't have to honor other people's, you know, opinions, you know, under the First Amendment, because we're private parties.
And I don't.
And I don't either, right. So, you know, a radio station can't violate your First Amendment rights, you know, and on and on. I mean, it's that's widely misunderstood. But
Twitter
also,
can't violate your First Amendment
rights.
Little shit Zuckerberg can't violate your First Amendment rights. I'm kidding.
Oh, God. So, how do you really feel? Okay, so. But the other widely misunderstood principle is this and when you get to the Second Amendment, people seem to misunderstand it as well. People think that these constitutional guarantees are absolutes, and courts never say that. They say all rights that are granted in the Constitution, whether they're implicit or explicit in the Constitution, right? All of them are to be interpreted, you know, within reason.
They're based on a reasonableness standard.
Yeah, reason. But you know, you know, you can't shout fire in a crowded theater unless there really is one. You know, I mean that's sort of the most famous example. But you don't. Freedom of speech is not absolute. And to that point, there are certain types of speech that courts have really expressly said are not protected, and that includes incitement, which is why you're not allowed to ask other people to imminently commit a crime. Obscenity is not protected speech because, according to courts, that there's more harm attendant to it than there is any valuable expressive meaning. Fighting words, right? Getting in somebody's face and trying to start a fight is not protected speech. And also true threats is an emerging area of law right now. You can't actually threaten people, especially over electronic means. And think you can get away with that. That's not free speech. The government can come after you. If you issue a serious threat, like I'm going to kill the sheriff, and it's a threat that a reasonable person would think you meant, and that the recipient, subjectively thought you would carry out, that's not protected speech. Because there are certain types of things that you can say, which are speech, to be sure, but they're not protected because there's too much harm that comes with it. There's not enough benefit and there's too much harm because common sense stuff.
I have preached for years that there are no absolute rights in the Constitution, that everything is based on a reasonableness standard. You name the provision in the Bill of Rights and I will show you how it's based on a reasonableness standard. It's written into the Fourth Amendment. Not protected against all unwarranted, you know, warrantless searches, only unreasonable ones. And the same thing, you can't own a bazooka. There goes the Second Amendment.
Right.
You're protected against self-incrimination, and you have certain rights, okay, but they don't when Miranda interpreted it, it's based upon a lot of criteria. That doesn't mean you're always entitled to be advised of your rights, and the same thing goes for your right to counsel and all of the trial by jury and all the things that go with it. People just don't understand, but they read things literally. There's a Maryland has a relative that finds one little phrase in the Constitution and does not read it in context and says that's what the Constitution says.
Mm-hmm.
People have to start thinking. They don't know how to think. They don't. And we're not going to get off on that tangent today, but they don't think.
Yeah.
And I agree with you.
That's
all right. So what do you really think today?
What I really think is I'm not sure what to think about a certain topic. And that topic is Tucker with a T, Carlson.
Oh yeah.
Are you cutting me off before I can do anything? Is that what you're trying to do? Go ahead.
Yeah, right. Let's keep it family friendly.
You know, he's scared to death. Right. I'm going to say what I say to him, and I just.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm right, always walking on eggshells, right? But yeah. So, but yeah, as everybody I'm sure knows at this point, Fox News fired Tucker Carlson. I love the way they issue these statements, right? We have mutually agreed, you know, to part ways. Yeah, Tucker was end of the show on Friday, saying I'll see you Monday. So. Let's not pretend this wasn't, you know, he got canned. I mean, he's been fired, obviously, and didn't know it was coming.
Like everybody else, Fox gets fired.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, Jeff has some things to say about how Rupert Murdoch does
same
this,
way.
Right? Yep. So, you know, obviously, you're glad to see him go. But when I say I don't know, not sure what to think about it, you know, let's see where they go from here. Tucker Carlson, obviously, as Jeff and I were talking about this morning, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of easy to laugh about. But most of us don't get to cost our employer $800 million just for starters, right? And then think that we're going to keep our job. I mean, that's kind of, I don't know about where where everybody who's listening to us works, but in my world... If I expose my employer to $800 million worth of liability, I'm probably not going to have a job tomorrow morning. you know, and again, that's just the start. I mean, with all the litigation that they're still facing. what I really think is more in the way of wondering something. I wonder whether Rupert Murdoch will ever come to the point in his life where he has to start thinking about what it is that he wants to leave behind.
His legacy.
I mean,
what is his legacy going to be?
When do you look around and say, okay, you know, I mean, he paid an $800 million, you know, settlement basically out of his pocket change. I mean, this is a guy who's got more money than any person would know what to do with. And do you ever stop to ask yourself, you know, as you round the corner to 100 years old, is it worth it? Is this worth it? Is this really? I mean, so I'm going to make more money by bringing down the American experiment. Is that a price that's really worth paying so that you can have more money? So I wonder, as he gets rid of Tucker Carlson, first of all, if Tucker Carlson is just the first, or is he the last, the one that's going to go? You know, what about Hannity? What about Ingram and all these people? But I'll wait around and wait and see where Fox News goes from here, right? Are you going to get rid of Tucker Carlson and just bring in some other right-wing conspiracy freak to replace him? Then that would mean that they learn nothing. And it would mean that Rupert Murdoch has no soul. He really doesn't care how many conspiracies his people have to sell, how much fear they have to gin up, how much danger they have to put democracy and all of the institutions of American governance, right? How much damage they can cause to all that. He just doesn't care. So I'll wait and see. Jeff and I were joking earlier, you know, I just couldn't sleep last night knowing that Tucker Carlson wasn't going to be on Fox News, regaling us with his wisdom.
I took five Ambien and I still couldn't get it out of my mind.
Yeah, right. You know, just I'm all broken up.
I really was. I was broken up yesterday. All day I watched that coverage because I was hoping someone was going to say that it was all a big, like, late April Fool's joke or something.
Yeah,
right. Okay, that wasn't going to happen. Let me say this. And I'm going to add on something to this. Everybody's debating why he was let go. The excuse that was put out there was that there had been a lawsuit recently filed by one of his producers, her last name is Grossman, alleging that he was guilty of telling anti-Semitic jokes, that he was misogynistic, that he had committed acts of sexual discrimination. And, of course, you know, that's why O'Reilly lost his job and others have been let go from Fox, because that was part of the culture there. And I understand that may be true, that those things were happening. I think Tucker Carlson was let go for the same reason that Don Lemon was let go. They both believed that they were invulnerable. They both did and said whatever they wanted to do and whatever they wanted to say. Whether it agreed with their boss or whether it agreed with the president of Fox News, I can't remember her name now, and they felt that they could do and say whatever they wanted. Don Lemon was let go yesterday, too. And he was let go because ostensibly one particular statement he made about Nikki Haley being out of her prime because she was over 40 years old, and women are out of their prime in their 40s, which is absurd. Ask Hillary Clinton. So
get closer to the mic.
It was an absurd
mind.
Thing to say, and then he double downed on it when he was challenged by Caitlin Collins. And then apparently the story is out that at one point, whether it was at that point or another, he got into Caitlin Collins' grill after a show because he was angry that she was interrupting him too much. Mm-hmm. Now, Caitlin Collins, I believe, is in her mid to late 20s. This is a woman whose rise at CNN has been meteoric, and that's an understatement. She is bright. You don't become the chief White House correspondent for CNN in your mid-20s. I'm sorry, when you got people like Acosta and others that are there. And you don't rise the way she did, where she started appearing everywhere and finally ended up on the morning show. You just don't do that. Not when you're in your early 50s and you've already lost a primetime show and you're getting stuck on a morning show and think that you are a dandy the way you dress. And all of a sudden now you're in charge. You're in the middle, so therefore you're in charge. When you got Poppy Harlow on the other side of you, who has been a star at CNN for a number of years, you just don't do that. And he thought he could say and do whatever he wanted. And he was invulnerable. And I think that Tucker Carlson felt the same thing. He could say and do whatever he wanted because he brought in the dough. He brought in the viewers. So I cannot be beaten up on. Well, that's what the aforementioned Bill O'Reilly thought. And he was unceremoniously shown the door. And he cost Fox far less than $800 million in payoffs to people who claimed that O'Reilly was sexually harassing people. So I agree with you. I don't know what made him think he was going to keep his job. Maybe he thought they'd get rid of Bartiromo and Judge Jeanine Pirro. Bartolomeo. I'm sorry, Bartolomeo, Maria Bartolomeo. I don't know what made him think that those two women would take the brunt of all of this and he would be okay. Well, two things are happening. Yes, people are watching him, but he only has one major advertiser, and that's Mike Lindell, the pillow guy, my pillow guy, who put a challenge on people to prove that he was wrong and that all of his data was fraudulent. And a guy came in and proved it and said, pay me the $5 million, and he cannot pay it because he says he doesn't have the money. So how good is he going to be on his bills for all of his advertising? And if that's the only advertiser you can get, it doesn't matter how many people watch. If you can't bring in advertising, people don't pay to watch you. People pay to watch you by buying products. So I think that's the major thing. Now, both of these guys, Marilyn sent me an interesting article this morning about these. Both these guys hired the same entertainment lawyer to deal with their firing. Because I believe still being paid, and they will continue to be paid, to keep them off the air and keep them from going someplace else. And to keep their mouths shut and not be able to violate their non-disclosure agreement. And I think they want to try to buy their way out of it so they can go to some other station, whether it's News Nation for Lemon or One America for Tucker. Yeah, I said it right. For Tucker. I don't know. But clearly I think they're trying to buy their way out of their agreements. And as you put it, this is pocket change. What he's going to pay is pocket change to Rupert Murdoch. He won't care. He wants them off the air. A year or two off the air, and these guys are toast. They're forgotten. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. It kills. And if you don't believe me, believe Megyn Kelly.
Or Bill O'Reilly.
He had to wait. Or Bill O'Reilly. Right. Or any of the others that have been let go. People get fired in that business, and they're stuck with non-compete. 6 months is a killer, let alone a year or two. People don't care about you anymore. They can write that no one's going to publish. They can try to do a podcast. But they can't really go out there with advertisers because that makes them a violation of the non-compete, and they'll end that.
Mm-hmm.
O'Reilly had to wait a year, I think, to do his podcast. And who listens to him? Who cares? So I think that this is the beginning, or maybe it's the – no, it's not the end. It's not the beginning of the end. But it is the end of the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I love that quote from Churchill. I really do.
Yeah.
And I think that there's more coming. It'll be a drip, drip. But if I were Jeanine Pirro, I would sit there and see if I could get my judgeship back. If I was Maria Bartolomeo, I'd start thinking about, do I want to go on, you know, Univision or something. If I were, I think Hannity has to be worried. He has to be worried, and so does Laura Ingraham. They have to be worried. They have to start listening to management, tell them editorially what they can and cannot say. And if they continue to defy Rupert Murdoch, then they will go too. That's the way I see it. I think that there's going to be a lot more. There's a lot more coming. But that's, I think that's what's going on. So now that we beat that dead, you can't beat that dead horse enough to make sure it does not rise again.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to beat that dead horse until literally, okay, there's no possibility that it will stand up and start running. Okay?
I got a question, though. Why did Rupert Murdoch permit all of this to take place? Because he also knew that this was just an agenda. So he was raking in the money. He was happy. He could have
put him into it, couldn't
he?
Money, and you have to remember that he is not an American. He did not start his business
in
the United
English.
States. Right. He started in Britain, and mm-hmm. they love their tabloids, and they can say anything they want to.
Same thing in Australia, too. Very big.
Right. They lie like crazy, and people read it. Mm. And he thought America was ripe for that. He did it with the New York Post.
Mm-hmm.
He bought the Wall Street Journal, but there was no way he could do it with them.
No.
And then Roger Ailes came in and taught him how to make money at Fox News.
Uh-huh.
And he was making a lot of money. But as Brendan just said, when do you have enough money, and when do you realize that you are destroying democracy in this world? And when do you, is that really the legacy you want to have? To basically have been somebody's Goebbels. So, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to be about the money. And it started by giving in to Trump because he made money. Because Roger Ailes, who hated Trump, hated everything he said, said, "Oh, we're making more money than we ever have before. We can't stop. We let this guy on anytime he wants to come on. He can call in. He'll stop everything you're doing, send all your other guests home, and just talk to Donald Trump on the air." That's how it started.
You know, maybe he cares, maybe he doesn't. I mean, his fiance just broke up with him. Maybe he was taking it out on Tucker. I don't know. It cost him $1 million for the ring. Okay. Be that long. Let's move on. Some of the other stuff that we wanted to talk about was the decision of the Supreme Court in the abortion pill case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think that I was not surprised, and I don't think Brendan was surprised by them issuing a full and complete stay with conflicts coming their way from different circuits and different districts. It was going to be chaos, and they really didn't want to deal with it in this term because they're so far behind in their opinions right now. I don't know how they're going to go into recess. And I think they just wanted to just slow everything down and take it back to square one. Now, I don't know if Brendan agrees with me. I think he does.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason why they did what they did. What was disturbing was the dissent of Justice Alito. And it was nothing more than a Donald Trump rant and rave of grievance against, in particular, the three women justices, the liberals, claiming that they were being hypocritical because they complained about the shadow docket, and that's exactly what they did here. That's what he said, basically. And refusing to accept that the status quo had to be maintained, and the status quo ante, not the status quo now, the status quo ante, that means before the ruling by Kaczmarek.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing but anger. It was a temper tantrum. And it's disappointing. He lost, and so he threw a temper tantrum, like Scalia used to do. But Scalia did it with some aplomb.
Right. Yeah.
Okay?
Alito was just like a bull in a china shop at this. And it deserves more mention than it got. Even Thomas would not sign on to that dissent. He just said, I dissent. I mean, basically, it says he dissented. No opinion, not adopting what Alito said. Nobody wanted to touch what Alito did. I thought that was absolutely flabbergasting. And what it tells me when he went after these three, when he went after the three women justices, Sotomayor and Kagan and Jackson, when he went after them by name, he was angry because he would have denied the state in full, administratively, because he's in charge of the Fifth Circuit. And before he ever saw the pleadings, before he ever could do anything, I think all three of them were knocking at his door saying, don't you dare. Don't you dare. I think Roberts walked in and said, don't you dare do that. This is for the whole court. And I think he was angry that he didn't get to do what he wanted to do like everybody else gets to do these things. Why can't I? It's my turn. And that's what it sounded like to me. It was my turn. You took my turn away. I get another turn. I mean, it really was a disgusting display by him. It just... I don't know.
Yeah. He's got some thin skin, man. You know?
He's a DeSantis in robes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, he's a DeSantis in robes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Remember, I mean, yeah, he does not like being criticized. Remember the, he was the one who was making faces during the Barack Obama State of the Union address, right? You know,
yeah, I remember.
That's kind of the first time you saw him have a little temper tantrum, you know, in public. Then recently he gave a speech, we're just, you know, belly aching about, oh, how can people say that we're a political, you know, that the court is political, and all, you know, this is whining and whining. And this, yeah, and his dissent was just whining. He's whining because, you know, the liberal justices on the court have criticized the conservatives for, you know, changing the law using the shadow docket, which, of course, is a completely legitimate observation, right? They grant these motions and they rule, you know, on procedural issues and change the law before they hear the merits of these cases. That's one of the things that they've been doing. And so he really got his feelings hurt. That they criticized that, and so now he used this opportunity to go after them and say, you know, that they were using the shadow docket. Here we go with the projection again, right? So, yeah, his dissent made no sense. Just a rant.
Yeah, but the worst part was, to me, is that he tried to use, he created a whole new standard because he clearly wasn't applying the standard that applies to whether you issue a stay. And one of them is a reasonable likelihood that the appellant will prevail on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he lost so badly on the stay tells you where this court is going to go. It gives you a real good hint where the court is going to go on the merits of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And that really upset him. Because his attitude is, if they can't get it through Congress, well, I'm going to allow anybody and everybody to have whatever restriction they want on abortion because I want a national abortion ban. He and Thomas both. And now he's getting handed his lunch. And he doesn't like that because he thinks this is his court. He thinks this is the Alito court and I'm in control, and now all of a sudden he's not so in control anymore, at least not on the issue that means the most to him. So he's a very angry guy right now. Welcome to our world, Sam Alito, because we're pretty angry at you. And that leads to more stuff from the court. John Roberts, who is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, for those that don't know that, hopefully you do, has been asked by Dick Durbin, who is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, to come in and have a talk with the committee. I think he's even gone as far as to say we will do it in executive session, it will be off the record, but we need to have a talk. Okay? And the talk they need to have is about judicial ethics in the Supreme Court and why there is such a great diminishment. Down to 24% of the American public has faith in the Supreme Court. 24%. They have a lower approval rating than Congress. They have a lower approval rating than Donald Trump. They are considered, they used to be considered the pinnacle of the faith that people have in our democracy. And yet right now, they're at the bottom. Why is that? Well, the politicalization, the lying that went on by people who were nominated to the court just to get there, the obfuscation and the failure to say, to answer questions that they clearly could answer. Ruth Bader Ginsburg answered questions about how she felt about issues. Others in the past have. That's why Bork got borked. But now they say nothing. And they lie. And they obfuscate. They are politicians. And they're appointed not because they will be good justices, but because they have the same political point of view as radical, and at least in the last three, as Donald Trump had. Or at least, as he was told to appoint them by the Federalist Society. And John Roberts, who's an institutionalist, should want to put the clamps on this, of this downfall of the court. And one of the ways is to hand up Clarence Thomas and say what he did was wrong. And yes, he violated the law. And do the same for anyone else that has done anything like this, that has so exposed this person to the kind of judicial arrogance that gets people thrown off the bench all the time. And Clarence Thomas is nothing but arrogant. And he should want to talk, and he should want to participate in establishing a baseline ethical standard for justices that he himself can enforce. But he won't come in and talk. Why won't you come in and talk, John? Mr. Chief Justice, come in and talk. Straighten out your house. Clean up your house. It's starting to stink like holy hell. Now, I was in Washington a couple of weeks ago, as I said last week, and I went by the Supreme Court. And we were on the front steps, and Marilyn says, why don't you go inside? I said, no, they're not going to let me in there. She says, it's open to the public. I said, they're not going to let me in there. they're never going to let me in that building. And I am, it's an exaggeration. Of course I can go in there. But I gave up my thought process, and I had applied a couple of years ago, but everything got delayed because of COVID. And now I got to reapply, and I'm not even going to bother because all they got to do is open up their Google machine. And, you know, I don't think I'll be very acceptable for them. Not as a lawyer, just my attitude. So I think John Roberts has to do something. The federal judiciary is starting to stink, and it's not just Clarence Thomas. The poster child for lying to the Judiciary Committee is Matthew Kaczmarek. He is the poster child, and I blame, and for him, I start out by blaming Democrats for not doing their homework, for not doing their own investigation, for not spending their time finding out who this guy is. And for those of you who don't know who he is, he's the guy that issued the opinion against Mifepristone, Pristine, or whatever it is, okay?
Yeah.
Who not only lied about his publications by changing the name on who wrote one of them when he wrote it because he knew he was going to get nominated, not only for giving speeches regarding Right to Life and representing Right to Life organizations, and being and or having a T-shirt on his son that said "I survived Roe v. Wade," and his wife says that's his favorite T-shirt. But more than that, he got to the bench because he owns stock in a company down here in Florida by the name of Publix, the supermarket people, where it's always a pleasure to shop. Whose owner, and it's a private company, whose owner helped finance the insurrection of January 6th, who gave money to the Stop the Steal, helped finance the Stop the Steal rally for Donald Trump. His mother worked for them for 30 years. She was a big shot executive at Publix. And somehow this guy comes out of the woodwork and is the guy that gets nominated in the state of Texas, where there are Publix, by the way, in the state of Texas to become a judge in a particular district for which he was the only judge. So if you file there, this is the judge you get. And none of this was found out by Democrats. None of it was disclosed to the committee. He never answered the questions, and he basically withheld information that would have caused at least two Republicans I know of to vote against his confirmation. And you wonder why people have questions about the federal judiciary. There is something rotten in Denmark. For those of you who don't know, that's Shakespeare. So, I mean, if I'm John Roberts, I can't wait to sit with the Judiciary Committee to set up a commission to establish new ethical rules for the entire federal judiciary, including the Supreme Court, and clean my house and get rid of the stench as quickly as I possibly can. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, and I'm not buying any, you know, highfalutin explanations from John Roberts about separation of powers, right? Oh, I can't be appearing in front of Congress, you know, we're a separate branch of government. You know, there's the judicial branch, the legislative branch, the executive branch, and they can't. That's nonsense. The framers set up a government where there's a lot of interplay among the three branches. I mean, Congress funds the Supreme Court. Excuse me. Congress decides how many justices will be on the Supreme Court. Congress confirms all the judges in the federal judiciary. Congress regulates the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court and all the jurisdiction of other federal courts. I mean, Congress has a role to play in the federal judiciary, and a big one. So this fake concern about separation of powers, I'm not buying it. There's no reason at all that any judge shouldn't go over
there. Let me ask you a question. Don't members of the executive branch have to appear before Congress for oversight?
Yes. Right.
Who funds the Supreme Court?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. I mean, who gives them their money? Who expands the number of judges? Who authorizes Article 3 judges, okay, in the lower courts? How are those authorized, all those lifetime appointments? How are those authorized? By statute? Because there's only one court established by the Constitution.
Right.
But he can't go see them? He goes to them to get money.
Right.
He goes to them to get more judges.
Hey, gentlemen, just a real quickie. There is a call waiting for you, so when you finish your thought, we'll pick up the caller.
Go ahead. Let's find out who this is.
All right, let's see who this person is. Good morning, caller. Would you be kind to share your first name with us?
Hello, folks. My name is Joshua. How you guys doing?
Hey, Joshua. How
morning.
Are you
doing?
I'm doing well. I think when it comes to all of this stuff, it's important to note that no state can actually contradict the Constitution that's actually in Article 2.
That is correct. But you take a look at the 10th Amendment, Joshua. And it says, any of the rights not enumerated herein are reserved to the states. They can't contradict. But if the right is not spelled out, or anything that's in the Constitution is not spelled out and does not address itself as something in the state does reserve the rights, which is why when the Supreme Court overruled Roe v. Wade, it had to go back to the states, because there's nothing in the Constitution that addresses that.
Yeah, yes, sir, absolutely. No, I think that we have a pretty misconstrued understanding of what our country is. It's 50 sovereign states. Those states are basically countries, and they're unified under federal law, and they've been contradicting federal law for, like, the past, like, 3 or 4 decades now. So,
Well, the Constitution was originally drafted, Joshua, basically – if you take out the Bill of Rights and you take out all the amendments and you look at the Constitution that was originally incorporated, it was an agreement. It was a contract between all of the states, and it was really more of an economic agreement between most of them. There was a centralization of government to a certain degree, but not as far as we see it now. And I think that's what people look at. The problem is that the amendments that have gone into the Constitution have changed that initial outlook. And those amendments are the Constitution. People say those don't count because they're amendments. They're part of the Constitution. I agree with what you're saying, though. I have preached to my students a lot of times that the word states or state originally talked about countries. And the original 13 colonies, which became states, were countries and thought of themselves as separate countries. That's why they use the word United States as opposed to United whatever, calling it just a simple country. So you're right about that. Mm-hmm. I accept that premise that you've just made. You're correct.
Another thing I was going to say on that front is that we're doing the American experiment, right? And that was based entirely under the doctrine of e pluribus unum out of many one. And I've been seeing a bunch of people saying that, oh, so many cultures can come in. You can have a Chinatown and a Koreatown and all these other different ethnicities taking over specific parts of specific cities. And I think that contradicts E Pluribus Unum. What do you think about that?
Well, I would say this. What you're describing is people saying we should have ghettos. It's a very appropriate time to be talking about that, considering we just celebrated an uprising in a ghetto 60 years ago, 70 years ago, actually. You're right. That is wrong. We've been described as a melting pot, and we should continue to be that melting pot. Our society that we know of has been made up of a number of ethnicities and people from a number of countries, all of whom had separate cultures. And we celebrate those separate cultures as opposed to isolating ourselves from them. But before you are anything, I've always said there's no such thing as a Jewish American. You're an American Jew. You're not an African American. You are an American of African descent, if that's the way you want to put it. You are an American first. And if you aren't an American first, then you don't believe in what this country's about. So I have to agree again with you. Okay. Thanks for calling, Josh. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Thank you, Josh. Be well.
Nice call.
Yeah.
Very nice call.
Well, yeah, he didn't invite you to put a to put a soccer ball where it doesn't belong, right?
As Joe did, okay, and then called back under some other name, okay,
right.
Okay, okay. Nice call from Josh. That was very nice. Thank you for calling, Josh. Let's see. There was one other thing that we wanted. I'm going to skip the Proud Boys. We can talk about the Proud Boys trial next week because it'll be over by then. There was an I'm not going to go through it, but there was an interesting opinion piece on April 21st from Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post. You should take a look at it. It's entitled, "What is Wrong with These People?" Okay, what's wrong with that boy? It's interesting. He talks about Fox. She talks about Fox News. She talks about our favorite governor, who, by the way, it's interesting. I have to say this, and we should spend more time on Ron DeSantis, but we don't have the time to spend on Ron DeSantis, except for to say we now have learned what people in Congress really think of him. He goes to talk to the Florida delegation to get endorsements, and three of them walked out after their meeting with him and announced they were supporting Donald Trump. And when asked why, and I'm going to use exactly what the person said, and he asked what he thinks of Ron DeSantis, he said, "He's an asshole." Okay. Nobody likes, I mean, that's what he said. I'm quoting him, okay? And if they can say it on CNN, I can say it on this, okay? Using the word. Okay? Okay, it's what the guy says. And basically what everyone was saying was, nobody likes the guy. He doesn't like people, and people don't like him. And if he ran against Joe Biden, what is the one thing that everybody says about Joe Biden, even people who don't like his politics? He's a wonderful guy. He's a nice guy. Okay, he talks to everybody. Can you imagine the comparison of him on a stage with Ron DeSantis? Mr. I punish everybody and I hate everyone who doesn't do what I tell them to do. I even hate people who do what I tell them to do. Against Mr. Nice Guy, everybody's Uncle Joe. Okay. I mean, I was flabbergasted that a Congress
congressman from the state of Florida would refer to him in that vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that great? And he's traveling the world trying to convince all these foreign leaders what a nice guy he is right now. He's going to he's going to Israel. He's going to France. He's going to Germany. He should go visit, you know, Putin. Putin will tell him how to, you know, I'll help you. Putin will say, I'll help you because everybody hates me too. So we'll be best friends. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I got to say one thing about Ron DeSantis. He has done what a politician absolutely cannot do. It's fatal. And that is turn himself into a punchline. It's a joke at this point, right? He's the anti-mouse. That's all he's got. And he's a punchline. And that's fatal.
If I were
He's against Mickey Mouse. How could that be?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Who gets into a fight with Mickey Mouse, okay? I don't understand that. You know, every kid in the happiest place in the world, and he's attacking the happy, he's going to build a prison behind him. It's the politics of punishing people, and even people in the Florida legislature are quietly saying, I'm tired of doing this. This falls on me. Like, I hate Mickey Mouse. I don't hate Mickey Mouse. I don't hate a company that pays $1 billion in taxes every year. I don't hate a guy who provides services to the people who live in the surrounding area for free, who created Orlando and Central Florida. Why would I hate a guy like this, who's the biggest employer in the state? Why would I hate this man? Why would I hate this mouse? I'm going to go out and buy a Mickey Mouse tie and wear it to the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
They're sitting there saying to themselves, why are you doing this? Let it go. You know, like Disney says, let it go, let it go. Okay, from Frozen. Okay, let it go. Okay, please stop. And he just can't stop because he's just mean. He's just a mean guy. And he can't help himself. He's just a mean guy. So I thought it was funny that he walks out of a delegation with, I think, 20 Republicans in it, and he gets one endorsement, and everybody else is endorsing Donald Trump. What does that tell you? If I'm a supporter of Ron DeSantis, I'm going to go to him and say, Ronnie, I know you hate being called that. That's why I'm calling you that. Ronnie, you're 44 years old, 45 years old. You can wait 4 more years. You have no hope. And if you run and you lose, you will be out of office as governor. And when that happens, you will disappear out of the politics of the state of Florida in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how much money you got in the bank. Let your PAC be used to support people running for Congress. Let your PAC be used to support whoever gets the nomination. Use your money to create goodwill. You're supposed to make friends when you're a politician, not enemies. Ask Mickey Mouse. He'll tell you.
Oh, God.
Ask Iger.
There's so much more we could talk about with him today, but I think that's where I'm going to leave off with him.
Yeah,
Ron
yeah.
DeSantis. I mean, he's a gift that just keeps on giving. I don't really need to have him on every week. We'll pick on him when we got nothing else to talk about. Okay?
Which is never.
Which is never. That's true. Did we get to everything on your list?
No, but next week we got to talk about Bonnie Willis, too. And Biden.
Oh, we got to talk about Fannie Willis. Yeah. But we'll talk about her next week. We will. We'll talk about her next week.
Yeah.
She's not going to do anything until June or July anyway. So.
Yeah, right.
That's
good. Okay.
Well, gentlemen,
it's been a pleasure, Hezzy.
I don't want to throw you off the air, but I think that you've got classes. at 11 o'clock, and we're beyond 11.
We have grading to do.
Okay, let's just leave it there. All right.
I was.
Ezzy, it's been a pleasure.
You should have been Sergeant Schultz. I see nothing. Okay. All right.
I won't say a word next week. All the best, guys. All right. Gentlemen, a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Okay, have a great week, Ezzy. Be well, okay?
And you as well.
Talk to you later, Ed. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Oh, it doesn't get better than these two unbelievable, brilliant minds. And they're so good at it. I don't know. They have a sense of humor, a sense of, I don't know, a great, great sense of knowledge. And they're able to put it all together. So I don't know about you. I'm certainly not on their level of understanding or awareness of what they know and who they know. And it's amazing how much information they can inculcate and at the same time define for us. And I was so thrilled with Joshua's call. What a brilliant call. Very educated. I was very, very pleased to hear him call. What a pleasure. Well, let's get on to a couple of things which we didn't discuss too much, but Biden evidently has announced his 2024 reelection campaign. So President Joe Biden today formally announced that he is running for reelection in 2024, asking voters to give him more time to, quote, finish the job, end quote. He began when he was sworn into office and to set aside their concerns about extending the run of America's oldest president for another 4 years. Biden, who would be 86 at the end of his second term, is betting his first-term legislative achievements and more than 50 years of experience in Washington will count for more than concerns over his age. He faces a promising to heal the soul of the nation amid the turbulent presidency of Donald Trump, a goal that has remained elusive. Quote, I said, we are in a battle for the soul of America, and we still are, Biden said. The question we are facing is whether, in the years ahead, we have more freedom or less freedom, more rights or fewer, end quote. So while the question of seeking reelection has been a given for most modern presidents, that's not always been the case for Biden, as a notable swath of Democratic voters have indicated they would prefer he not run, in part because of his age. Concerns Biden has, quote, totally legitimate, end quote, but ones he did not address head-on in the launch video. So few things have unified Democratic voters like the prospect of Trump returning to power. And Biden's political standing within his party stabilized after Democrats notched a stronger-than-expected performance in last year's midterm elections as the president set out to run again on the same themes that buoyed his party last fall, particularly on preserving access to abortion. So this is going to be very, very interesting. Well, freedom, personal freedom, is fundamental to who we are as Americans. There's nothing more important, nothing more sacred, Biden said in a launch a video, which painted the Republican Party as extremists trying to roll back access to abortion, cut Social Security, limit voting rights, and ban books they disagree with, and continuing, he said, around the country, make America great again. Again, extremists are lining up to take those bedrock freedoms away, end quote. Continuing, he says, this is not a time to be complacent, Biden added. That's why I'm running for reelection. Every generation has a moment where they have had to stand up for democracy, to stand up for their fundamental freedoms. I believe this is ours. That's why I'm running for reelection as President of the United States. Join us. Let's finish the job. And that's what he said today. As the contours of the campaign begin to take shape, Biden plans to campaign on his record He spent his first 2 years as president combating the coronavirus epidemic and pushing through major bills such as the bipartisan infrastructure package and legislation to promote high-tech manufacturing and climate measures. With Republicans now in control of the House, Biden has shifted his focus on implementing those massive laws and making sure voters credit him for the improvements while sharpening the contrast with the GOP ahead of an expected showdown over raising the nation's borrowing limits that could have debilitating consequences for the country's economy. Well, let's finish the job, he says. I know we can. That's what Biden said in the video, repeating a mantra he said a dozen times during his State of the Union address in February, listing everything from passing a ban on assault-style weapons and lowering the cost of prescription drugs to codifying a national right to abortion and the Supreme Court's ruling last year overturning Roe v. Wade. Buoyed by the midterm results, Biden plans to continue to cast all Republicans as embracing what he calls, quote, ultra Make America Great Again politics, a reference to Trump's Make America Great Again slogan, regardless of whether his predecessor ends up on the 2024 ballot. He spent the last several months road testing campaign themes, including painting Republicans as fighting for tax cuts for businesses and the wealthy while trying to cut social safety net benefits relied upon by everyday Americans and rolling back access to abortion services. Biden, speaking over brief video clips and photographs of key moments in his presidency, snapshots of diverse Americans and flashes of his outspoken Republican foes, including Trump, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, exhorting supporters that, quote, this is our moment, end quote, and to, quote, defend democracy, stand up to our personal freedoms, and stand up for the right to vote and our civil rights, end quote. Sorry, Biden also plans to point to his work over the past 2 years, shoring up American alliances, leading a global coalition to support Ukraine's defenses against Russia's invasion, and returning the United States to the Paris Climate Accord. The public support in the United States for Ukraine has softened in recent months, and some voters question the tens of billions of dollars in military and economic assistance flowing to Kyiv. Well, the president faces lingering criticism over his administration's chaotic 2021 withdrawal from Afghanistan, after nearly 20 years of war, which undercut the image of competence he aimed to portray to the world, and he finds himself the target of GOP attacks over his immigration and economic policies. As a candidate in 2020, Biden pitched voters on his familiarity with the halls of power in Washington and his relationship around the world, as he promised to return a sense of normalcy to the country amid Trump's tumultuous presidency and the deadly COVID-19 pandemic. But even back then, Biden was acutely aware of voters' concerns about his age. Quote, look, I view myself as a bridge, not as anything else, Biden said in March 2020 as he campaigned in Michigan with younger Democrats, including now Vice President Kamala Harris, Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. End quote. There's an entire generation of leaders you saw stand before me. They are the future of this country, end quote. 3 years later, the president, now 80, Biden allies say his time in office has demonstrated that he saw himself as more of a transformational than a transitional leader. Still, many Democrats would prefer that Biden didn't run again. A recent poll from the Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, shows that just 47% of Democrats say they want him to seek a second term, up from 37% in February. and Biden's verbal and occasional physical stumbles have become fodder among the GOP, which has sought to cast him as unfit for office. Biden, on multiple occasions, has brushed back concerns about his age, simply saying, "Watch me," quote unquote. During a routine physical in February, his physician, Dr. Kevin O'Connor, declared him, quote, "healthy, vigorous, and fit to handle his White House responsibilities." Age acknowledged that while some in his party might prefer an alternative to Biden, there is anything but consensus within their diverse coalition on who that might be, and they insist that when Biden is compared with whomever the GOP nominates, Democrats and independents will rally around Biden. Sorry, one second. All right, bear with me a moment here. One second. I evidently lost my place. Okay, something's happened. Evidently, it looks like I've lost the internet for some crazy reason. One moment, we'll see again if this is working or not. All right, it looks like it's not working. You know what? I know that we're still on with the Blog Talk Radio platform. However, because I can't access my notes, we're just going to leave it at that. I want to thank you for being with us. Thanks to our guests, of course, from the U.S. Constitution, both from WMU Cooley Law School, Professor Brendan Geary and Jeffrey Swartz. Thanks to Joshua for calling in. And thanks to you, our listeners. And apologize for this this comeuppance. And I'll have to reset. Maybe there's something that's going on with the internet service. So thank God we were able to hold on to the Blog Talk Radio platform. So that's our day with you today. All the best and thanks again. Goodbye. moment.